Blog Talk Radio.
And the collective wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank of KateLovingShank.com, author of the Prayer Prescription series and creator of Uprooting Our Fear of Death, Bringing It Out of the Closet, the Google Hangout webinar. My guest this evening is Natasha Alvarez. We will be discussing her project, The Year of Black Clothing, in Mourning, in Solidarity, in Rebellion. The name of the program this evening is Creating a Life That Matters. Now, Natasha hasn't yet joined me, and she is about to probably get on. But she has created a beautiful blog, and I believe she is writing on it every day. And she is wearing black every day because she is celebrating the fact that she's getting in touch with her feelings about raising children in a world where children cannot drink the water that they are offered. They can't drink water from the streams that they can't even swim in the rivers that present themselves in every community in the world. So joining me now is Natasha Alvarez. Hello, Natasha.
Hi there, Kate. How are you tonight?
I am wonderful. I was just going through the fact that you have this wonderful project called The Year of Black Clothing, in Mourning, in Solidarity, and in Rebellion. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to take up this very, very interesting challenge.
Okay, well, I mean, it is kind of a long story in a way, because I feel like the story started, I mean, a long time ago when I was born, and even the generations before me, I believe that that's sort of like when it started, but I will kind of get to that point, but I'll start a little more in the present. So let's see, 14 months ago, my husband and I, Will, and I had a little boy. His name is Revel. And it took us a really long time to decide if we wanted to have a baby. We were together for 10 years before we decided that it was time. And for many of those years, we fully thought that we were never going to have children because of the state of the world. I mean, the things that I talk about in the blog, the water being poisoned, the soil being poisoned, the air being poisoned, I mean, those are the building blocks for life. And so as we would talk about it over the years, we just kept coming back to the place of, well, I don't see how we can bring a new life into this world when the building blocks that are used to create life are either contaminated or don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So we went through this again and again and again. And finally it got to the point where we were like, you know, okay, these are all facts. Like, this stuff is happening. But people have continued to have families, you know, all throughout time, no matter what's been going on, because that is sort of the core of our community. That's the way that we pass on information. That's the way that we pass on love. That's the way that we contribute to the world, let's say. So we decided to have a child, and it was a wonderful decision. We're so just, like, delighted with our little boy. But in the process of becoming a mother, and I think every mother will know what I'm talking about here, and probably all the fathers too, is I just found that I went through this process of kind of stripping away everything that I knew about myself and everything that I had been, and then kind of being reborn as this new creature that is a mother, which you know, is a very intense process for anybody who's become a new parent. And it just sort of like forces you to examine kind of like the stuff that you've been carrying and the baggage that you might have from your own childhood and all that kind of stuff. So, and before we had our son, we had been, you know, fairly heavily involved with environmental activism and social activism and just kind of trying to make some changes, you know, in our local community and in the world. And so I knew that once I had him, things would probably change, like it would be more difficult for me to do that. And it turned out it was really impossible. I mean, you can't go to meetings with a little baby. And the way that I chose to mother was to be with him all the time, and I still am with him all the time. So I started to get this feeling, like, as happy as I was being a mom and spending time with him, that there was still this, like, piece of me, these things that I needed to get out and express so that I could be more present for him and for myself and, you know, for my family. And so that kind of led to the idea of doing a personal project in my own life as a form of activism and then writing the blog so that other people could, like, experience what I'm going through at the same time.
Cool. Very cool. And do you find that people are migrating to your site more and more as time goes on? I mean, are you writing every day and you plan to do so for the next year, or do you just plan to do it forever?
Well, it's so funny. You know, we're about 2 months in now, which isn't very long, especially because I am planning to write for a year and I am planning to do the project for a year. But I'm finding the process of going through these feelings and then writing about them so cathartic and so therapeutic that, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that I'll come to the end of a year and not want to continue with this in some way, but it's also hard for me to imagine because it's a long way off still. And yeah, one of the most incredible things has been just having so many people, you know, come up to us and speak to us and get a hold of us and call us and email us and say, I'm so glad you're saying these things. I have been carrying these things around with me my whole life, and I thought I was crazy because nobody talks about this stuff. And so just that, like, human connection piece has been the most amazing part.
Well, after writing in a blog for 365 days, it will be very difficult to stop doing it. They say it takes 21 days to erect a habit in your life, but you're talking 365 days. I one time did that, and I just love the blog, and I just will never stop. But I don't do it every day anymore.
Yeah,
but I think it
is interesting because it's very much like writing in a journal, which I have never really done in my life. But now that I am in the habit, it's like, oh, this is so helpful to me, you know, on a personal level.
Well, I came across a statement this morning that I thought was really relevant to your project and to for anybody who is confronting the kinds of things that you are confronting and the things that you've just described. And this is the statement. It says, don't be afraid to embrace your own inner suffering. So I'm going to repeat that. Don't be afraid to embrace your own inner suffering, because when you do, you confront, as you say, like a rebirth. You know, you are no longer in a state of denial. You are vulnerable, but in a good way, and also in a way that makes you feel that you are more alive.
Yes, yes, most definitely. I love that. I love that statement and that idea. I really had started to feel like, and I talk about it a lot on the blog, that I feel like I am suffering from a kind of brain damage of living in a culture that is violent and competitive, and I call it the culture of destruction. And so that was creating in me sort of like a rift, that part of me was walking around all day smiling and having a good time and chatting with people, while this other part of me was sort of like suffering in silence, like, well, you know, we're living in a collapsing ecosystem. Why are you walking around smiling? And I was kind of starting to feel like it almost split personalities. Like, on one hand, I'm just like laying down on the ground with sorrow, and on the other hand, I'm just, you know, walking around like nothing's happening. So really, really my goal with this is to sort of bring those two pieces of myself together to try to figure out how, you know, because these are the facts. We are living in a collapsing ecosystem. There are to sort of like help that situation. But I kind of want to figure out how I can hold the grief of it and sort of like the beauty of world at the same time. I want to know, I want to try to bring those two pieces of myself together.
Well, it sounds also like there's a denial piece, too, that we see with people who are not confronting the things that are making the world kind of collapse like that. I mean, and the politics of the politics is ridiculous, and so much is not in alignment with cooperation, with love, with harmony. And but on the other hand, we have to confront that suffering that we feel, and that is what you're doing on your blog. Can you tell us the exact URL of your blog? I can put it here in the chat room. I have a chat room here.
Oh, sure. It's so it is. It's the year of black clothing. .wordpress.com.
Okay. I have the tier. That's a good play on words.
Nice. That works too.
Yeah. So I did go out and buy a bunch of black clothing. I've been wearing black ever since I met you in the park that day.
Oh, that's so amazing, Kate. Well,
yeah.
You know, I'm really interested in exploring this idea. Years ago, Will and I saw a little clip of a show where this man went and he stayed with a group of natives. There were some Pacific Islanders, and in that show, it was a documentary, like just a little clip, they showed one of their grieving ceremonies. So the man that came to visit them was leaving the island, and they all gathered together and they just wailed. They cried and they laid on the floor and they let out all the sorrow of losing that person, even though he was just a visitor and he was only there for a little while. And that struck such a chord with me. And I thought, well, that is something that's completely missing from our culture. Like, if we're upset about anything, we're expected to hide it. Crying should only take place behind closed doors. I mean, even if you lose someone very close to you, you're expected to keep going on with your life like normal. You're expected to take medicine to make you, like, stop feeling sad. So we do everything in our power to sort of keep those feelings at bay. I could see that for this culture, it was so healing for them to join together in their grief and mourning and express it. And I thought, oh, I want that badly. And so,
yes,
you know, that's a piece of this, too, that I'm just wanting to sit with other people who are also in mourning and in grief and feeling these feelings. And that's what I want. I just want to let it all out together. And I think that that's healing for all of us, and I think it's healing for the earth too in some ways.
Yeah, as we practice in that way, the grief will transform into a higher level of communion and people, a higher understanding and just transcendence. That is what happens when, you know, nothing stays the same. Everything is constantly changing. So as soon as you zero in on what needs to be done within yourself, because that's really what it is. What it is for all of us is that once we go deeply within ourselves to embrace our own inner suffering, then it transforms and it actually becomes something else, because it's always, always changing like a butterfly transformation. But then again, you know, our culture is not one to embrace death in any way. And what you were saying about that other culture and how they faced loss is really what we need to study and to maybe integrate it within, well, first of all, within ourselves. And, yeah,
I mean, we are terrified of death. We can't even say the word in our culture. You know, we say passed away or some other euphemism. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying to us. And a part of that is that I think the sort of the animal aspect of it has been removed because of corporations and because everything is sort of wrapped up with money and people trying to make money off of things. They've even stolen death from us. I mean, they take the corporation takes your loved one and wraps them up and packs them up and off they go into the ground. And you don't get to have a connection with that rite of passage that is death, and so it becomes very terrifying. And there's the same sort of mystery that has happened and the same sort of like corporatization of birth on the other end of our lives. So
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
We had our our baby at home. And so we were able to participate in every aspect of that sort of like animal earthiness of that rite of passage of birth. And I just
yes.
feel like if we don't get to sort of like participate and bring that back into our lives, death will continue to be very frightening and just kind of like out of our realm of normalcy. I mean, these are normal life cycles that we mm-hmm. have to be able to connect to. They are what sort of makes the world go round, you know?
Yes. And I love the idea of the death cafes where people don't meet to, you know, beat their chest about death, but they just, you know, or they're not there because they've had are wanting to have some sort of counseling session because they have lost a loved one, but they're just getting together and just talking about death and as if it's a normal kind of thing to do. So
yes.
you and I were talking about doing that down at a really cool place in our hometown here called The Seed. And maybe once we start it, it will be something that will be difficult not to continue, but it's just a matter of starting it, I think.
Oh, yes.
But,
I think it's really important that we kind of get that going and get that pulled together because, like I said, there are so many people. I mean, people I would never even imagine, like, needing to talk about this stuff or wanting to connect on it, and they're coming up with tears in their eyes and saying, you know, I've been needing to say these things. I've been needing to be in mourning with other people, and I didn't even know it. And that just floors me because it's like we're all walking around feeling this stuff, but we're
yes.
forcing ourselves to stay quiet. But as soon as we refuse to stay quiet any longer and we just let it out, that's where the power and the energy and, like you said, the transformation can start to come in and we can, you know, make a change.
So you must feel very happy that your work is almost like a catalyst for people who needed this. And maybe,
yeah, it's so
wonderful. And you're also involving people, too, to contribute their own brand of what it is they need to do. Like I just was reading your last, I think it was your last blog post about giving something away, and that could
yes.
do so much.
So we've sort of been planning.
Read to us. Do you have your blog right there? Read something.
Yeah,
that
I can
you
grab
read
it up.
To us about. Yeah.
Sure. I wanted to say quick, you know, the project wouldn't be happening at all without my very dear friend, Michelle Johnson, who's an incredible photographer. She's been sort of adding visuals to the blog as we go along. And Will, my husband, has been participating in the project and wearing black the entire time, and we've been going through the process of mourning together, which is hugely healing and supportive. And he's been doing some writing and taking pictures for the blog, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've sort of been brainstorming about ideas together, but I can read a little bit of this idea of the 40 days of giving. Because
yeah.
sort of like as we've been going along, you know, the three of us have been looking at each other and saying like, well, there's got to be ways for people to tap in here and for us to make a connection. Like, we want to grow this culture of rebellion, the people who want to live in a different way and are not quite
mm-hmm.
sure how to do that. And, you know, we must be able to connect with them. And so Will and I started talking about sort of like, well, what is our sort of like threefold idea for how to make the world change? And we just
mm-hmm.
went off of our own personal experiences and what has been so transformative for us, and that's been reconnecting to the land and reconnecting to other people and ourselves. And then we've learned to regenerate the land through permaculture techniques and gardening techniques and learning about natural
mm-hmm.
ecosystems. And then
mm-hmm.
we've also found a lot of joy and nourishment from our activism in the world and trying to sort of teach other people and get other people involved and try to make changes whenever we can.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started thinking, well, what is something that I feel like is just a sticking point for me? Like, what makes this, what is causing this brain damage in my mind that this civilization is sort of, you know, making me feel unhealthy and uncomfortable with things? And to me, it really all comes down to things. It's like I see my nephew and my little son playing together, and they play so well together when we're outside, when they're just like playing with sticks and soil and running around. And then we come inside,
mm-hmm.
and there's all these shiny plastic toys, and they go to war with each other. It's like, that's
oh,
mine, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine. So
yeah.
that is what happens to all of us when we stockpile these things and we
mm-hmm.
And I talk about in the blog, too, like being addicted to buying and acquiring stuff. And we're trying to fill this sort of, like, emptiness and this loneliness in our hearts that I think comes from, you know, living in a way that is that we are separated from the earth, from the land, and from each other. And so so the idea of 40 Days of Giving is, especially through this, like, holiday season where it's become so filled with consumerism, is giving to each other, but giving of ourselves. So,
yeah.
You know, emotions and things from our own homes and from our own lives, so that instead of giving stuff, we're making a connection with each other. So I can just read a little tiny bit. Should I still go ahead and do that?
And also, yeah, these pictures are unbelievable. Wilson has done tremendous work, as has Michelle. Just beautiful, beautiful pictures. So go ahead, yeah.
Okay, so I'll just read a tiny bit from what I wrote yesterday. And I wrote, why 40 Days of Giving? Because my brain is damaged from civilization, and giving is therapy. Because this season makes me sick with its bright lights and plastic toys. Because I want to break down my walls, forget where you start and I begin. Because I want to build a world where people take care of one another and the land just because we can, just because we want to, just the way we always have. Or did before everything got all broken up and ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to get it back. Because I want to take it back. Yes, because I want to take back the world by giving. And then I did a sort of like a list of, so the idea of 40 Days of Giving is that there's a challenge, a giving challenge for each day. And it runs from November 22nd until December 31st. So, for example, day one would be give something away, something that you own, a book, a mixed CD, a painting, a keepsake, a pair of socks, anything you want. Give it to anyone you want, the girl at the coffee shop, your father, the kid down the block with the red jacket, your best friend. Notice what it feels like, this act of giving. See how it makes you feel. And so we sort of, I said, too, we would start small and then sort of build from there. So the first challenges are kind of just simple, you know, give something that you own or make a meal for somebody and give it to them. And by the end, we'll be working up to things like forgiving someone or forgiving yourself or giving thanks, that kind of thing, kind of more of the, like, big ticket items. So I'm excited. We've had a lot of good feedback. I'm excited to start it myself because I do feel like it's going to kind of, like, loosen up some things for me around things and consumerism. And we're having a lot of good feedback from other people. So it's going to be fun, and I think it might actually become a new tradition for us around the holiday season.
Oh, absolutely. Tell us about the sitting spots.
Sure. Will and I have been together for about 11 years, and when we first met, we were in college, and then we decided to do some traveling, and we left school, and we fell in love with how beautiful this country is. I mean, it's amazing. The land just speaks so loudly if you take the time to listen. So when we got back here, we ended up coming back here, which is where we're both from. We knew we just needed to learn more. You know, we would walk outside in the park, but we didn't know the names of anything. We didn't know what we were looking at. The plants were just sort of a wall of green. You know, we didn't know the language. We couldn't understand. So we started to just research and kind of learn some things, and we met some people, and somebody recommended to us a program called the Kamana Naturalist Training Program. And it's a correspondence course. You can still get it. It's absolutely incredible. I highly recommend it. But through that course, part of what you do is you find a spot somewhere, you know, in the landscape. It can be in a park, it can be in your backyard, and you go there as often as you can. You know, it's a super simple idea. You find a spot that speaks to you, and you go there all the time. But at the same time that you're going to the spot, you're also coming home and you're looking up what you're seeing there. You're looking up the plants, you're looking up the animals, you're journaling about them. Will came up with this phrase that you're living it twice. You're seeing it firsthand in the field, and then you're coming home and you're, by writing about it, you commit it to your long-term memory. So I started to do that program. I absolutely fell in love with it, and I fell in love with my spot. And so through my spot, I kind of, you know, I learned all of that stuff. I learned the names of the plants, the names of the animals, what they're good for, what they look like in all the seasons. You know, I saw the same animals year after year, the same deer, the same cardinals, the same spiders. You know, I it was literally like falling in love. I fell in love with the landscape. So much so that I got the coordinates of that spot tattooed on my arm, and Will got the coordinates of his spot tattooed on his arm, so that no matter where we are, we can look at those tattoos and kind of call up the feeling that we get when we're there. Because it's, I mean, it is, it's building a relationship with the land. Just as, just the same way you do as when you're falling in love with somebody, you get to know them in all seasons, in all their different outfits, and you fall in love. So, I was talking a little bit about the reconnection piece of kind of revolution. So we've got the reconnection, the regeneration, and the rebellion. But the reconnection piece, one of the greatest tools is a sit spot. Just going out, sitting, paying attention, you know, seeing nature in all of her seasons and all of her outfits, and falling in love. So so much of this project has been just me sort of like working through what's in my brain and in my heart, and the sit spot just ended up coming out, and, you know, people, it's resonating with people, which is incredibly exciting.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is opening up a whole new world for you with your writing. Did you know you were a writer before this?
You know, it's so funny. I definitely don't think of myself as a writer. I mean, I was an English major originally, so I knew that I could do sort of like the technical pieces of writing, but it wasn't something that necessarily called to me. And I still don't think of myself as a writer. Like I told my friend the other day, I feel like I just list things and talk about what I see. You know, it's not so much the writing for me as needing to express these things, but I am very glad that I'm able to say it in a way that people are connecting with, because that's super exciting.
Right, and I also see that you bring in a little Ho'oponopono here. I'm kind of going down the blog. Yeah, that is a beautiful forgiveness exercise, that's for sure.
Oh, I love it so much. We've been using it really kind of heavily on the blog because, and I learned it from a dear mentor of mine. Her name's Katie Singer. And she taught me that, and I have said it to myself, I mean, probably millions of times over the past couple of years, and especially through the process of bringing a child into the world. But it's just like, I mean, it says everything to me. It's just, it sort of like opens up your heart, and it releases something, and it stops the wheels from spinning, you know?
Right.
So I've been using it a lot on there, and I know, you know, Will and Michelle have been using it too a little bit. Just to sort of say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that the world is like this. You know, we are all feeling really broken, and I'm sorry to the world. I'm sorry we're breaking you. It's just sad, you know. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't help for people to say, I hope you feel better. I want you to feel better. Let me give you a hug. Let me do something for you. Sometimes you just need to be really sad. Like, it doesn't help me when people say, you know, the world is broken, but, and I know you're really upset about it, but, you know, here, I'll give you a hug and I want you to feel better. I don't want to feel better. The world is broken. Right. I want to do something about it, you know? I don't want to.
Exactly.
I don't want to brush it away. I don't want to hug it away. I want to cry and get really pissed off, and I want to transform those feelings into action.
Yes. So the action part, what do you, or maybe it's too early to envision what that action would be, but what do you have a glimmer of what the action might be?
You know, the action part is still where Will and I just, you know, we come together and we're like, what to do? You know, where does the change happen? Like, how do you really start to just put a stop to this, like, monster of a civilization that is rolling along and eating everything in its path? And, I mean, part of it is just the small actions that we're doing now, the sit spot, the 40 days of giving. We've done one, we called it a blackout, where we turned out our lights for an hour, and we invited some people over, and we invited other people to turn their lights off for an hour. So turn off the lights, turn off the TV, you know, turn off the computer, turn off the phone. Unplug from electricity, not because there's, like, a power outage, but because we can unplug anytime we want, and we are going to do so every so often because we can. And we had a little fire that night, and we talked, and, you know, that was a really empowering experience. So, I mean, I'm hoping that we can have some more blackout actions and involve more people, and kind of get people to start figuring out, like, who they are when the lights are out, when the screens are off. And a big part of it, too, is kind of just this idea of rewilding, of making our bodies and our minds and our spirits as wild as possible. So, you know, through reconnecting to the land, through teaching each other, you know, we all have so many incredible skills. Like, people who work as an accountant have incredible skills with numbers that they could teach other people. People who can jelly have incredible skills that they can teach other people. And this idea of sort of, like, sharing these skills so that we can build our own culture kind of outside of the culture of destruction that we are sort of enmeshed in, and that if we can draw together in our smaller communities, like, there's a real power, an actual power, and, like, an actual energy in that, in being able to take care of ourselves and being able to know which plants are good for medicine, how to give somebody stitches, you know, like I said, how to file your taxes, how to cook a meal from scratch. You know, there are these actual physical skills that keep us alive and sustain us, that if we can sort of start to steal those back from the corporations and realize we are incredibly inventive and incredibly resilient people, then we can join together and we can actually make changes in our lives. So, you know, that's like a kind of a huge part of the action idea. But I'd love, I mean, I really don't know what's going to happen, you know, since we're still at the beginning. I'm hoping there will be sort of like more and bigger actions and that we'll be able to join together with other people. But it's sort of like time will tell. And we're also really inviting people that if they have any ideas and they want to brainstorm and have a think tank, like, we are more than open for it. I think we just need to get the discussion going. And, you know, a lot of times with activist groups, you see people kind of nitpicking each other, and there's a lot of infighting between people who are involved with this cause and that cause and this cause and that cause, and you're doing the wrong thing and you're doing the wrong thing and you're doing the wrong thing. But we just need to pull together and realize that we're all fighting against one large problem, a systemic problem, which is the culture of destruction. And then if we can kind of come together, we have much more, we have a much better chance of changing things. But that's, you know, quite a challenge.
And you are being such a great example to your son with this whole project.
Well, I mean, it's just so...
I mean, he's noticing, you know, he's noticing all the camaraderie and the great connection and the sense of community that you are establishing with this project. It's great.
I hope
great
so.
Great for him.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that's obviously the goal, is that we'd be able to give our boy, you know, some of the stuff that we maybe didn't have in our lives and, you know, sort of allow him to foster. We want to sort of make the container for him to foster his own connection with nature and with the land from birth. And that's something that we, you know, didn't have and we didn't get to have. And, you know, just sort of allowing him the space to become who he is. I think that's, I mean, that's a huge challenge for all of us who are parents, is just kind of making the container and then stepping back a little bit.
Yes, yes. And, well, he'll never forget it because it's giving him a sense of fun, you know, because really that's what seems to be happening. You're all having a lot of fun with this. You're discovering all new aspects, not only of yourself, but new aspects of what is possible. And what started out as being a very sad moment, and now it's transforming into joy, I think. And I think you could really start a worldwide movement with this, and also there's probably things going on already that you can plug into, but the whole fact that it is becoming such a rich, creative experiment that you will never forget. So enjoy every single minute. That's my advice. Just really enjoy the process because, oh, of course it's going to go into things. It's going to blossom into things that you can't foresee at this moment, but it really is quite a beautiful project that even after so many days into it, you probably would never imagined it would be the way it is.
Oh, I couldn't. I mean, I was so scared to start this. This is something I've been talking about for years, this idea of grief and feeling that there's this grief that I've been carrying. And like I said in the beginning, this grief that is not only my grief, but was passed to me from my parents and their parents and their parents and their parents and their parents and just passed on down the line. And with each generation that is more separate from the land and more separate from each other, it just grows larger and larger. And so I was terrified to look at this stuff. Like, I mean, anybody who knows me will say, oh, she's so cheerful. I can't believe she's getting into something that's so dark. But, I mean, I'm only that cheerful all the time because that's my coping mechanism, you know. There's still the dark piece. I just don't show it very often, and I was so scared that if I opened up that Pandora's box of grief and sadness, that it would suck me in. And I even went to people who I consider, you know, my mentors and my elders, and I said, you know, hang on to me because I'm not sure what will happen. I feel like it's just going to suck me up. But
and
that
what was
doesn't
the advice?
Happen. That doesn't
no.
happen. You, by surprise, by looking at the sadness and the grief and the mourning and letting those feelings come up, it's like it makes everything else so much sweeter. It's like if you're eating something bitter and then you're eating something sweet, the sweetness tastes that much sweeter. And that seems to be what's happening with this. So, yeah, sometimes I'm just crying and I just feel horrible and I am so sad, but at least I'm feeling that. And at least that is real and authentic, and I'm not stuffing it down and plastering a smile on my face. I'm letting those feelings come out. And then when the smile is on my face, it's a true smile. And so it's kind of, that's where I feel like it's really, you know, such a therapy because it's like bringing those sort of like broken pieces together.
Well, and you haven't gone to the doctor to get a bunch of antidepressants because you think you're depressed.
Right.
Instead of doing what you're doing is a great therapy. Yeah.
And what I really want to tell people too is, you know, we're all feeling sad and lonely and depressed for a reason. It is not that something's wrong with you. It is not something that you need to medicate away in most cases. You know, there are people who medication works super well for, and I am all for that. But, if your gut is telling you that something is the matter, something is the matter. And I think that is happening to so many of us on such a large scale right now. And, you know, our culture doesn't want us to talk about that, and it doesn't want that to come to the surface. But, like, there is something very wrong with the way that we're living, and that's why we're feeling so miserable. So we need to look at that. If you stay in denial about the misery and you keep saying, you know, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, you never look at what's wrong. And if you never look at what's wrong, it stays hidden and invisible. And so then you can never learn to fix it. If it never comes to the surface, you never get to work on it. Just like bringing up all that. Just let's get it out. Like, get it out, share it with each other. We're all carrying this stuff around. And there is such a mending in that. There's such a coming together in that.
I know. It's a beautiful project, and you were led by your intuition to do it. And you, I mean, I really think this is just wonderful that you have come to this.
Well, on the day I met you on the grassy hill, that was a huge turning point because I said, how could I have met this wonderful woman in the middle of our walk, in the middle of the afternoon, and you were so supportive, and it was such a validation of what I was feeling that I was like, I'm ready to go. But, you know, it was like one of those magic meetings where you talk to the right person at the right time, and I'm so thankful to you for that.
Oh, I think that's wonderful that we could actually do it for each other because I was working on this uprooting our fear of death thing, and it seemed like it's so synchronistic that what we were both working on the same thing coming from different angles, as you know, really. So cool.
So interesting. It's so interesting.
I know, and that's what life is really all about, is these connections, and we work on things that we think we're doing alone, but we're not. that no, there is no such thing as doing anything alone. We are all connected to our hearts. We are all one. Nobody is really separate. And the more that we rise up in that wonderful universal truth, really the corporations and the Monsantos and the, you know, crazy things that are going on can't really survive.
Exactly. They have no power. They have no power over us. Once we really start to believe that, and it will take some practice because we are not used to thinking that way, but once we really start to understand that we are all connected and that, you know, we can take care of ourselves, we don't need corporations and businesses and products to help us do that. I mean, that is
right.
A freedom. There is a freedom in that.
Absolutely. Well, we have come to the end of this wonderful show, and let us, well, certainly come back. I'll have you back on the show when we, you know, get further into the year and see how you're doing.
Well, Reiki, well, I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart just having me on to talk about this stuff. And I just wanted to say, too, if people have things that they want to express through video, song, writing, anything, paintings, whatever, email it to us, send it to us, Facebook it to us, you know, get it to us. And I have been sharing other people's guest pieces on the blog, which is just, it's a beautiful, you know, coming together and mourning, you know, even if the blog is not mourning face to face, it is a kind of community, and even that is helpful. So
well, that's what a blog really is, isn't it? A community.
Yeah.
Well, what I'll do is I'll send you the embed link to this show, and you can put that up on one of the, you know, coming days.
Oh, that's
on
so
your
fabulous.
Blog.
So you can, if you have something you want to send us, please, anybody who wants to send us something, please send it. Just, you can comment it on one of the blog pieces, or you can send it to morningsolidarityrebellion@gmail.com. And, you know, just be creative and send us whatever you need to voice. Like, we want to bring people together on this.
That email address again. Repeat it again.
Sure. It's morning. So like morning, mm-hmm. MOURN, morningsolidarityrebellion@gmail.com.
And it's all one. It's not like a period.
Nope. It's just all one.
Okay. Natasha, thank you so much. I really have enjoyed every second of this, and I look forward to seeing you out and about.
Kate, I am so happy to talk to you. I'm very happy to connect with you. I know you're a busy woman. So, yes, I will hopefully see you soon, and we will continue to work together on this. It's so exciting.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. Take care.
You too, dear. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.